double digit SAFTAcast, we have broken the 10 mark. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 10 of the SAFTAcast. I'm your host, Scott C., and if I had $1 million, I would buy your love. Folks, I've got important stuff to tell you about and an important interview for you today. It's a great one, but first, let me update you, as always, on happenings around the Sundress Academy and the Sundress Publications world. The big one on the table right now is the TNE Poetry Roadshow. Begins this week. Two of Sundress's head honchos, T.A. Noonan and Aaron Elizabeth Smith, that's the TNE, get it, are going on a poetry road trip tour. Cities they're hitting include Marquette, Michigan on Sunday, August 3rd, Chicago, Illinois, Tuesday, August 5th, and Springfield, Illinois on Sunday, August 9th. However, it all kicks off this week in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, on July 31st, this Thursday, at 6 p.m. at the Wiggle Whiskey Garden and Barrel House. It is going to be a fantastic show. I encourage you to check this out. Now, if you can't make it out to any of these cities on those nights, you can still follow the action on the Sundress Publications Twitter. That is at Sundress Pub on Twitter. I'm sure there will be regular updates and shenanigans from the road. You could do that, or you could stop by the newly redesigned store at Sundress Publications. That's right, the entire store has had a major facelift and overhaul. You can buy many, if not all, of the Sundress book titles there. You can get the naming rights to one of SAFTA's poultry, be it a chicken or many ducks, whatever you want, or, I should say, register for upcoming workshops, which, of course, we'll keep you posted on here on the podcast, but you can check them out for yourself with the great descriptions right there. And trust me, folks, I've gotten a heads up about some of the workshops coming up in the next 6 months, and let me tell you, they are fantastic, what's coming up down the pike. Some great people coming into Knoxville to help out with these workshops. It is going to be fantastic. You don't want to miss some of these because they are just truly awesome. So, that again, go now. Go to thesundresspublications.com, click on store at the top of the page, and that will take you right to the store. Go now. Or rather, don't go right now. Wait until this podcast is finished, because this is one you do not want to miss. Corinna McGlynn is on the show today, and before this interview, we'd never spoken before, the two of us, but as you will hear, we practically became poetry BFFs by the end of it, and even lost sight of who was interviewing who at a couple points. I don't even know anymore. So buckle up, my friends, because the theme song is about to drop. Did I just mix my metaphors?
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Corinna. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I'm glad we finally managed to work out our schedules to do this.
Sorry. That was probably mostly my fault. It's been a little crazy over here.
Dare I ask what's going on?
It's not an interesting story. There's just, it's, you know, when multiple small things just add up to a life of chaos.
Well, for us writers, going to the supermarket becomes a 3-paragraph odyssey.
If you're lucky.
Complete with unruly people throwing burning tires at you or something like Mad Max.
Wow, where do you live?
South Florida.
Oh, well, that makes more sense. I thought it had to be that or, you know, Detroit or Afghanistan or something.
I can name a lot of places in the country. Probably Alabama, maybe.
Alabama, certainly.
You gonna go over by Derry? You sure do got a pretty car.
All right. What you reading for? That's my favorite. That's one of my favorite Bill Hicks imitations of a waitress somewhere. I think it's somewhere in Alabama, coming up to him chewing gum at a like Waffle House or something. So maybe it's Florida if it's a Waffle House. Do they have Waffle Houses outside of Florida? I don't remember.
They do. There's one in where I live, and I've been there a couple times. It seems to cure a number of ills and cause a number of other ones.
Oh, man. I only went to one once, or I tried to go to one once, and it was on somebody's recommendation, which is the crazy part. It was, oh, man, I think I did end up writing like a 3-paragraph essay, maybe more, on just my experience of walking into Waffle House and then walking back out. It was one of the, like, roughest, most surreal, like, scenes I've seen in a long time.
It's like you didn't even get the chance to sit down, look at the picture menu, or order food, or even eat it. You just walked in, took a look around, that's it, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a wait, and there was also, like, a sewage problem in the parking lot, and a guy in a sort of half-assed hazmat suit asked me to go around, and we walk in, and, like, they still allowed smoking in there. I don't know if that's still a thing, but we walked in, and it was just this cloud of smoke and grease and, like, last night's vomit just met us enthusiastically.
Along with that wonderful smell of desperation and desolation.
Oh, it was something else. It inspired me. So I'm glad that Waffle House exists, I think.
I'm glad too. I've had my Waffle House stories. None of them are exciting, sadly. They're all kind of like more just musing on the wait staff and their interactions with each other and what they're saying to each other.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. Are you one of those people who will sit there and eavesdrop on other people's conversations and, like, write down interesting things they say out of context?
I won't write them down, but I will keep them in mind.
Yeah.
I have an ear for a good title or a very good line or how language is used.
Right, right. Oh, no. We're talking about writing. That's like...
Oh, no. Bad thing. Bad thing. Especially when it comes to Waffle House. You don't go there to write.
Wow. Are you sure? Have you ever tried it?
No, I have not. Maybe I should.
Maybe you should. Report back.
I must try this. I got to find something to kick my ass in gear again about writing.
Oh, are you having a little bit of a slump there?
I would say it's a 3-year slump at this point.
3-year slump.
Yeah, back last month. Well, this will be the end of the writing thing. But last month, I basically said, "That's it. I quit. I'm done. Just done."
Why?
I just got more invested in, you know, my job and pedagogy and all that I just kind of left writing behind. You know, you work for, say, a whole day teaching and office hours. I think you come home at 9 o'clock at night. You don't have the energy or the strength to look at your work or edit or send stuff out for submission.
No, I'm totally with you there. And it's caused a lot of conflict in my life because there's, you know, that's what most of us do. Most of us who go into, like, the, you know, academic track writing biz thing, we go through the MFA programs, the PhD programs, whatever. That's really, you know, our only job prospects at this point, you know, is hopefully cobble together enough teaching gigs or luck out and get one solid teaching gig. And you know, I actually really love teaching legitimately, but you're right. I've had semesters where I taught, you know, or years where I taught like a 4-4. And even if I'm teaching creative writing, I'm done. That's all I can do.
All my writing goes to student marginalia, thesis.
Right. Which, of course, they don't read, most of them.
Yeah, and yet I still feel like I have to do it. Mm-hmm. I can't not do it. When I sit down, I'm like, okay, I'm only going to do the first page. You know, I'm through the whole essay going, you know, I'm like on page 6 going, I'm not sure what you mean by this paragraph here.
I know.
More evidence.
The hours I have wasted, you know, I hope you've reached this point where their end of the semester projects or papers or chapbooks or portfolios or whatever you're having them do. Once they turn those in, I just straight up tell them, I say, I'm not seeing you in class again. So you're not getting comments back from me unless you explicitly ask me for them after this date.
Oh, I don't even do that.
If you don't ask me for them, like, after this date and, like, before this date, then you just don't ever get them.
Yeah.
And nobody asks me.
No, they don't. I get maybe one a year that says, can you send me some comments after the semester's over?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can do that. That's fine.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
So many of my colleagues, you know, are still laboriously doing end of the semester comments on everybody's papers and portfolios. And I'm like, are you insane?
They're not. they're not going to get the papers back at the end of the semester anyway, so on final projects, I might make some notes to myself to remind myself, why did I give this the grade in case it's challenged or something?
Sure, of course.
But I'm not going to go massive intensive like I do when they get a chance to revise the paper earlier in the semester.
Yeah, totally.
No, but then you're left with nothing in the tank to write.
There's nothing. The semesters where I was teaching full time, I'd be so exhausted at the end of the day. It's like my brain didn't even work. I wouldn't remember driving home, which is scary. You ever do that where you suddenly are in your driveway and you're like, I don't remember actively coming here.
I haven't had that, but then I've quit drinking about 8 years ago, so I don't remember anything.
Yeah, well, I wasn't tippling during my comp classes, but I was tempted to a couple of times. But yeah, I was just so tired all the time, and my throat would be sore, like, after talking so much, and oof.
Yeah, my students probably are scared of me because I come into class every time with a large cup of coffee. And I know some of my students actually listen to this, or former students, but yeah, that's usually decaf.
Really?
I have it only as a way to keep the throat wet so that I can keep talking.
Really?
Also, it gives me that chance to do the dramatic pause of, so what do you guys think about this?
Oh, yep, absolutely. That's
fascinating.
That's a good one. It's important. If you don't have something to do that dramatic pause with, then you're just sort of like weirdly waiting up there. And if they don't talk fast enough, it feels too uncomfortable. And then I jump in and start doing all the talking again and answering my own questions, which is not good pedagogy.
No, I'm told, okay, you give them 7 seconds. And if they don't respond, you give them 7 more because eventually someone will crack. But I'm a New Yorker. If it's not going in 30 seconds, I'm like, come on, what the hell's wrong with you people? Come on.
Go, 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 go.
Come on, I'm at a McDonald's. If it's not there in 15 seconds, I'm pissed off.
Wow.
Definition of a New Yorker. We say motherfucker at least once a day to something.
To something.
Something.
Maybe I'm a New Yorker, Scott.
Maybe. I don't know. Are you originally from New York? I know you're in Texas now.
No, I am a native Texan. I haven't always lived in Texas, but I am from here. I was raised here, and I'm living here now.
And you're damn proud of it.
You know, come on. Texans get a lot of flack for like their pride in Texas. I do love Texas. I do, honestly. Well, okay. I love many, many, many things about Texas. Maybe I should say that.
Okay.
I don't love every single part of Texas, obviously. And there are many things, especially politically speaking, about Texas that I'd like to change. But, you know, it's home, and especially the Texas Hill Country. That's my jam right there. If I'm having trouble sleeping, I'll just fantasize about, you know, being in, you know, New Braunfels, like laying in an inner tube, you know, or just hanging out like on the grass in a square in Kerrville, Texas, or something like that. Or if I'm feeling a little more desert-like, I'll fantasize about Marfa. Have you ever been?
I know of Marfa. I've actually never been to Texas at all. It is a state. It's on my hit list because I would love to go to Texas. I'm a country music fan, old country, and Austin is one hell of a town, I'm told.
It is one hell of a town. I mean, I'm biased because that's where I grew up, but no, it's fantastic. If you are into live music, if you like doing things outdoors, if you like good restaurants, if you like a little bit of you know, weirdness in your city, I can't believe I just said that. Shoot me, just.
It is. Austin's a little bit goofy, though.
It's a little bit goofy, but it's also a little bit hippie and countercultural. It still has, you know, those roots that it clings to viciously, but it's also a big tech center now, and it also is a university town. It's a lot of different things.
And it's got a great theater scene, too, happening there. Great comedy scene.
Yeah, great, great comedy scene. Oh, I am so upset that Houston doesn't really have, it doesn't get the same kind of comics coming through it that Austin does. That makes me very upset. It seems like every other, new stand-up comedy, CD that comes out was recorded in Austin. And I'm like, oh, damn it.
There's a good improv comedy scene, too, in Austin. You'd be surprised. Actually, no, considering it's a good comedy place. I know this because, strangely enough, I have friends that are in the Austin improv comedy scene, so.
Really? Yeah, I wonder if we've crossed paths with some of the same people. Do you do improv? Is that why you...
I used to.
You used to.
Long ago.
I dabbled in it for a while. I auditioned for comedy sports once upon a time.
Ooh.
And then I got called back, but then the callbacks, I had a horrible flu during the callback, so I decided I was too sick to go be funny, so I didn't go. And then they were kind of asking me over and over and over again to come back and audition when they had other, when they had other auditions, but I just, moved on to other things. I was very, very involved in slam poetry at that point, so I didn't have a lot of time for anything else. That and swing dancing. That's mostly what I was doing with my time those days.
Improv comedy, slam poetry, and swing dancing.
Yep. How 90s Austin does that sound?
Very 90s Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Very. So, okay, so you did swing dancing. I'm confused about something. Maybe you can help me with this. What exactly is contra dancing?
Contra dancing?
Because the word, I'm a linguist, I'm an English major, I look at it and I go, contra dancing, okay, against dancing, so the whole thing is just sit on the bleachers then. Got it.
No, contra dancing is like, I don't know how much I'm going to be able to illuminate this, because it's like one of the few types of dancing that I have never done. It's, I think... And, excuse me, anybody listening to this who knows better than I do. But I think it's sort of a clogging or something like clogging group dance that, makes patterns.
Okay. So,
When you see people in old movies in various time periods where everybody's in a circle holding hands, and then the ladies duck under people's arms and then go into the center and sort of meet up and then go back out and switch around. It's sort of like a sort of square dancing thing. If only there was a way to look this up. There is a computer right in front of me.
Exactly. I know I could look this up, but I'm lazy.
Okay. All right. We'll just let it be a mystery for now, but...
We'll just imagine it's some kind of weird hybrid cross between Dutch clog dancing and Texas line dancing.
Okay. Yeah. We'll go with that. And some sort of Jane Austen, ball parlor dance or something.
That's done in the Low Country.
Yes. In the Low Country. Definitely not in the High Country.
No, because I've been to one contra dance, and that was at a friend's wedding, and they weren't dressed in frilly ball gowns a la Pride and Prejudice.
Really? They were or they weren't?
They weren't. It was a wedding, but, okay. So you had people, but it was like semi-formal, in that mid-range where it's not tuxedos, but everyone's dressed nice.
Okay. Yeah. The social dance scene that I'm a part of has gotten quite lazy. We all used to dress up in period outfits, and that had its own problems, but boy, did it look cool. But now everybody just, you're lucky if anybody wears, a skirt or has sleeves.
Unless it's maybe a public performance thing, come join our organization.
Oh, yeah. Then they're going to be all, fancy and looking like Lana Turner or something.
Put on the poodle skirt real quick and do the bouffant hairdo.
Well, maybe not so much the poodle skirt and the bouffant hairdo, but I get you.
Hey, Charlie, make sure you got a pack of Lucky Strikes that you can put in your shirt this time, all right?
No, you did improv comedy. I don't believe it. You let it.
I did. It's funny, that New Jersey, New York voice does come out in class sometimes, circling back. Whenever I'm I find that when I'm really upset about something, suddenly the Brooklyn, New Jersey accent comes out in me, and I'm from upstate New York. I have no connection to the city.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, did you hang around with people who did have that accent?
When I got to college.
Okay, all right.
And then, of course, my wife's family is from Brooklyn. So yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, I've met the ones that actually text with the word use in there.
Really? No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a story she tells of her uncle coming for Thanksgiving dinner, and he went out to the supermarket real quick to get something, and he texted my mother-in-law saying, hey, what type of bread do you use?
Do you use Y-O-U-S-E?
Yeah, that's what he did. And then put use, U-S-E after that. What type of bread do you use?
Use. Oh, wow. Wow. I love that.
There you go. You can make that into a title if you want.
All right. I'm writing it down under look up contra dancing. Use.
Use and contra dancing. See, this is why I love doing this show. We're not even 20 minutes in, and we've covered already Texas, Waffle House, improv comedy, and the desire and understanding of what contra dancing is.
Where will we go from here?
Well,
I think that's pretty common to get when people get upset or they get agitated or they get drunk or intense about something, their natural accent is, their hometown accent is enhanced. It suddenly comes out of hiding.
Yeah, there's something special. New Yorkers have secret abilities. For one, we have this get the fuck out of my way look that is patented by us.
Patented.
Patented. No other state has this ability that if you're walking, let's say, in a public place, let's say you go to a stadium or something, and there's a bunch of people with clipboards, all I have to do is just turn on that look, and nobody will speak to me. They will all, they'll look at people next to me and be like, excuse me, sir, would you like a moment to... And they'll just ignore me.
Since this is only audio, can you describe... I think I can picture what you're talking about. I'm imagining what I would, what face I would have on if I wanted people to not talk to me and leave me alone. But can you describe this face?
I think really the only physical transformation is a lowering of the eyebrows, like creating what you think is a crease across the front of your forehead. Mm. And you kind of just stare straight ahead. And you walk with a purpose as if you know what you're supposed to be doing, you know where you're supposed to be going.
Yeah.
And if anybody removes you from that situation, there's going to be a problem. And I think there's a supernatural element here. You have to create an aura around yourself and build this like cold shell of like, do not touch me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I have, are you sure? I mean, maybe that is a New Yorker thing. I mean, I've certainly done that. Especially if I'm in a city that I don't live in and I am going somewhere, like I'm walking somewhere, especially if I'm alone. I think women walking alone in a place they don't live are taught to do a similar sort of thing.
I was about to say, I think you have a similar power.
How do you feel about, have you ever been to a city where you're very irritated with the way people move from one place to another with the sidewalk dynamics?
I think so. I'd like to say that when I first moved to the Southeast from New York, and people were pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And they would apologize to me for something that was entirely my fault.
Right. How'd you feel about that?
And
it was was it a little off-putting?
I went into New Yorker mode. I'm on a staircase and a woman, almost bumps into me, and it was entirely my fault. I was the one taking up most of the stairwell.
Yeah.
And she said, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir." And I think I shot her or him. I don't even remember if it was a guy or a girl. I shot him a look that basically just said, "What the fuck are you talking about?" And just moved on. The New Yorker in me just came out.
You must have been so baffled.
They probably were, but as time went on, I understood the South a little more, got a little more chill.
Yeah.
Except when I was in Alabama and I was at a Burger King.
Why? What happened to the Burger King in Alabama?
It took them 3 minutes at least to get the quick order for me. My blood sugar was down. I'm like, I want food quick, and I got a long drive ahead of me. And instead of working on the food, they just kept talking to each other. Did you hear about Rebecca? She's going to have her second baby. She's not even graduated high school yet. No, I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm sitting there going, I don't care about you people. I really don't.
give me my food. Just the slowness. That really bugs me too. That's why, you know, that's another reason I think I might actually be a New Yorker and not know it. Because any sort of slowness or public inefficiency in a public place really gets under my skin. Yeah. I find myself getting very worked up and irritated by it.
Like if somebody decides to write a check in a grocery line.
Exactly. Or if there's a long line at the coffee shop and I'm like, I just need my coffee, you know, and there's people up ahead of me going, so what's simple syrup? What's the difference between a latte and a cappuccino? Do you guys make your syrup in-house? Or, oh, cool. How much are your t-shirts? Like that kind of, like,
do you vulcanize tires while I wait?
Ugh, just shooting mental lightning bolts into the back of their head. I've gotten so mad at people who are just completely just unaware that there is a line of angry, uncaffeinated people building up behind them. I haven't done this in a while, but I actually like tapped somebody on the shoulder. They turned around. I just went, really?
I don't think people do that enough.
It's terrible. It's terrible. Less than I used to, but I have like a small streak of rage in me.
It's not a violent streak. It's not like I'm going to actually kill you. I'm more of just pissed off at petty things.
I know. I really had to learn to be zen about public inefficiency when I was living in Michigan. It was bad there. Like, especially walking around, people would just be taking up the entire sidewalk and moving so slow. You know, like they'd be with a group of friends and they're walking just like four abreast, you know, there's no way to get by them. And they're just, I don't even know how someone walks that slow. Like, how are you walking that slow? Why are you walking that? It doesn't make any sense how you can walk that slow. It's like, you know, when you see, you know, in a parking lot and it says like, you know, 5 miles per hour speed limit. And have you ever actually tried to go 5 miles per hour? You feel like your car is going to like stall out on you.
True.
Are you really like even driving at that point?
Yeah. You know, I could be walking this.
Yeah.
Oh, so what were you doing in Michigan?
Oh, I was getting my MFA in poetry. Ah. Good old poetry.
Oh, good old poetry.
Good old poetry.
Yeah. Well, let's get away from that because that's about writing and everything.
Yeah. Let's not touch that.
I'm just curious because it's like when I was living in Michigan. Well, I don't know your bio, so I have to go that route. You know.
Yeah. No. That's what I was doing there.
There you go. You were in college.
Yes.
Doing college things.
That's like mostly what I've done.
And still to this day, I'm still living the college life.
Still to this day. I've been in college my whole life and yet I feel that college has never really happened to me. I still feel like I'm somehow like missing out on some essential idea of the college experience.
Well, you're in Texas. Go to the Longhorn, you know, go to a football game and
started, you know, I started at UT, then I flunked out, but you know.
Well, there you go. You had the college experience.
Was that the college experience? Right
if
there?
If anybody asks, you just tell them, yeah, I went to UT and I just like totally did not care. And you know, like, man, I just totally, you know, wake and bake, man.
I wasn't wake and baking, but I was going out every night, either dancing at an 80s club, swing dancing, or I'd be like at a poetry slam or like a late night poetry reading or something. And I'd like stumble in at 3 a.m. and then, you know, sleep through my first 2 classes. It was bad.
No, then congratulations. You had the college experience.
Is that it?
Yep, but that's it.
But none of it took place like at the college.
That's the whole point.
Is it?
No. Oh. Think of all the famous people who you hear interviews with them. And they're like, yeah, I went to college for 2 semesters and it just didn't work with me, and I left. And now they're famous.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go. You had the famous person's college experience.
Famous person's college experience. I like that. I'm gonna go with that.
I think you
Thanks,
should.
Thanks, Scott.
I'm an inspiration to many. Which makes me wonder why I don't have a book yet.
But because you quit writing, remember?
Oh, yeah, but I'm still, that's the manuscript from before I quit.
Oh, what you going to do with that? But see, now you don't care. So now, like, you should just give it to somebody and go, I don't know, see what you can do with this. And then just wait for either no news or good news.
You know, I've tried that route too, and still it's not working. But I just want to get it out so that I can put on the back. I really want, as one of my blurbs on the back, you know, just I want to give it to a hobo or someone and just be like, read this real quick and tell me what you think. So that I can put that as the blurb on the back.
You know, not enough people do actually kind of like funny, interesting blurbs. Even like the most experimental and funny books have these very like earnest blurbs from the most famous people they know.
And they're always, nothing against those people, but they always come off as very pretentious quotes and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
When did poetry become so serious?
But don't you think it's getting... No, it's not.
There are some out there, and yet I'll still go to poetry readings, and they'll get up and be like, the following is a poem I wrote 5 years ago. And then they go into that poet reading sound of,
oh.
And then we walk through nothing and cannot believe our eyes.
I love talking about poet voice. It's like one of my favorite things. I cannot believe how many people are just horrendous readers. Just horrendous. You know, and for all sorts of reasons. Part of it's poet voice. Part of it's like them trying to read things off their cell phones. Part of it's like trying to, you know, having this long preamble where they're trying to like explain away their poem or apologize for what they're about to do. You know, part of it's, you know, trying to insert these weird pre-scripted jokes. You know, as sort of the little banter, like between poem banter, a lot of it is, I don't know, just rudeness, you know, not being able to like even read the room, not listening to the other people who are reading, not giving the audience what they want, and assuming that they don't want to hear, you know, poetry to begin with. Even people who are way into, you know, they're there at a poetry reading, talking to a crowd that has come to a poetry reading, and they're acting like, I'm sorry, the whole time. Like the audience is mad at them for being up there and reading poetry, which is what they came there to see.
Yeah. No, I taught a course on this actually through Sundress one time about the poet voice and how much I hate it. Why can't we just be natural on stage?
I don't know. Well, I mean, I don't think, well, I don't want to overemphasize the importance of being natural. I mean, I think natural is usually the best bet. But don't you think there are certain instances where some sort of stylized performance is in order?
Agreed, but not in the stuck-up way. It needs, like you said, you've got to be able to read your audience.
Right. You know what I think of every time... you know Amy Schumer?
Yeah.
Okay. You know that story she's telling about like the bridal shower she goes to? She talks about that girl Bridget who was the worst, and she talked in this really low little girl voice. Bridget talked like an angel was sleeping on her tongue. You know, that thing.
That's poetry voice.
That's poetry voice. That lilting, the thing where everything ends in a question. Even when it's not a question. As if it contains some hidden meaning. You know, that thing.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, it's bad. And somebody was trying to make an argument that nobody does that anymore.
Oh.
It's bullshit. I see it all the time.
I do too. I hear it all the time. Every reading I go to, at the very least, there will be one poet who will do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Drives me mad.
Oh, I know. I know. I also love when people announce that they're telling you what's going to happen next, but it's sounds horrible. Like whatever they say, you just immediately tune out. Like before they even start, they'll say like, okay, so this next piece is a little bit longer. And it's brand new. So I don't know how it's going to go. It's in 25 parts.
And, I've been to one reading where someone did that, and it was okay because it was Ann Carson.
You know what? Can I tell you something?
Hmm.
I fell asleep at an Ann Carson reading. I mean, like, all the way asleep. Literally asleep. Like, I snored.
I will pretend to my wife, who is an Ann Carson fangirl, hopefully you did not hear this part.
No, I adore Ann Carson. Oh. I love reading Ann Carson. There's something about, and I've gone to see her three times at this point, and there's something about her presentation style. It's not bad, but it makes me just catatonic. It just knocks me out. I immediately get sleepy.
She's very soft-spoken.
Yeah, yeah.
And she has this amazing, almost Emily Dickinson quality about her on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
That you feel very calm and relaxed.
Yeah. And the time when I actually fell asleep, all the lights were out in the auditorium because she was doing a slideshow of sort of abstract things. So, yeah, it was quite relaxing. And I was very tired. I'd been teaching.
makes sense. Fair enough. But no, I agree with you. Coming back to what you're saying, I understand exactly what you're saying. They're like, so recently I've been reading a lot about hydrangeas and other flowers, and they're a really fascinating plant. Did you know that they come in multiple colors and that they live in the ground?
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been learning a lot on Wikipedia about plants and gardening, and so I started writing a poem about gardening.
And it reminded me of my father used to do gardening when I was a little girl, and at the time, you know, I thought it was just a boring thing that my dad did, and now I've sort of, my dad died a few years ago, and I've sort of reliving my, you know, quiet bond with my father through the act of gardening and really reconnecting with the earth as well by putting my hands actually in the soil. I think it's important for people to put their hands in the soil at least once a day.
You know, life comes from seeds, and we all come from the ground. In one way, in the Bible, it even says that God made man from the dust of the earth.
Okay, now that's too much.
Okay, fair enough. Most of the poetry readings I go to don't invoke God.
No, me neither. I did a reading, I guess it was last year, where I had to read, you know, I was in a group of readers. I was like the sixth one up or something. And the guy who goes right before me says, straight up, he comes up and he says, I'm going to read some poems about my experience in Vietnam, and then I'm going to read a poem about my dog, Buck, that died last week. He was going up before me.
All I could think of is if I had the guts in that audience just to go, and this is about my, and I'll be finishing with a poem about my dog Buck who died last week in Vietnam.
will you come to every poetry reading in the future with me and just like whisper these things in my ear?
I will proudly be your the one that you can jab your elbow into it, and you know, okay. Hit me in the ribs.
Okay.
And, maybe AWP or something next year.
All right, deal.
Because that's actually, AWP is, I think, quasi sort of where I met you, became aware of you, was Chicago a few years ago. And I remember I was like, this is good. And I think the reason is that you don't pull that poetry voice or style on stage.
I try not to. I live in fear of it. If I'm actually doing it, I'm doing it in jest.
Mockery, basically.
Mockery. I do have a couple of poems where I use that voice in mockery. If that's the reading I think it was, I was probably reading from Condo, Texas, which is all about the things I hate about the Pope is. So you might have seen me do mock poetry voice that very night.
I may have. It was a late evening, but I do recall that.
Wow. Wow. That's cool. I had no idea you were at that.
Yeah, it was my first first one.
I remember that reading.
And then, okay, now it's time for me to become slightly creepy, but also kind of like endearing. So last year in one of my classes, I taught the title poem of your book, I Have to Go Back to 1994 and Kill a Girl.
Oh,
to my students.
Cool.
Because I forget what the theme was for my semester, and to my wife was like, she's going through our poetry bounce. She's like, here, try this one. Take a look at this one. I'm like, ooh, yeah. Yeah, this one will work. So,
do you remember what they made of that?
They were really confused, yeah, and I can understand why. You know, I don't know if our readers, our listeners out there, if they don't know the poem, we don't. You know, they can maybe find it online.
Yeah, it's there somewhere.
It's out there somewhere, but I don't remember. This was a year ago, but I know they were a little bit confused. But one of my students was like, "Wait a minute, you can kind of read this in two directions. You can read it left to right, but you can also kind of read it up to down. Not exactly, but you can."
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you can kind of. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
And mainly we got into discussions then about like, what do certain word choices mean? What connotations do they trip off for you as a reader? Yeah. And that's how you connect with it.
Yeah. 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 I got a lot of questions about the way I formatted the lines in that book, because there was a lot of that. There's a lot of poems that were in columns, and I did have an eye out for how things read in different directions, but it's still, I was so amazed by people's confusion about that. It seemed to me that the dominant way to read something, whether it's in columns or not, is still left to right.
Mm-hmm.
So I was confused when that people thought you read the column straight down, that was the first way they tried. But you know, I did want that to be a possibility. I wanted the eye and the ear to have sort of delicious things to do and have multiple connotations sort of present at once. By allowing for those directions, even if I didn't want them to be necessarily dominant. But we're talking about poetry.
I know, and all I was going to say about that was that I taught your work, and that was really cool, and so it's flattery, but it's also kind of creepy at the same time. I realized that. But also that I like the poem simply because I'm obsessed with personal history, and so I'm sitting there thinking of it like the Terminator. I'm lying in a ditch watching for me to come out of the house so I can destroy myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is also the dominant reading of that poem, you know, that the speaker is trying to kill some version of her past self, you know.
And create the time paradox to prove everybody wrong that, no, I can kill my former self and still be here.
That's right. That's right.
There you go. There needs to be more time travel poems about that kind of stuff.
I think so. I'm obsessed with any movie that comes out about time travel. I don't care how bad it is. I will watch it.
What is your favorite time travel movie?
Oh, God, this is so embarrassing. I don't care. I'm going to say it and say it proud. That my favorite time travel movie is Somewhere in Time.
Okay.
Do you know this movie?
I know of it.
It's got Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour in it. It's from like 1982 or 3.
Oh.
Like on the surface, it's such a chick flick. It is a sappy, dated movie. But what I found out, like, quite a few years ago, actually, is that they have this huge fan club. I think it's called Insight or something. They have this huge fan club just dedicated to this movie. They have annual conventions. They have, like, a website
with memorabilia
you can buy. Like, really good memorabilia, too. And most of the fan base is men. Interesting, right?
Yeah.
And then I keep running into, like, guys. I'll get into conversations with, you know, we'll find out that we both, like, really love movies, and we'll start, like, talking about our favorite movies. And quite a number of times, more than I would have ever expected, a guy will say that Somewhere in Time is one of his favorite movies.
Huh. I don't think, I can't lay that claim down, because I don't think I have seen it.
Okay, well, I've got some homework for you. Go see it and report back.
I will try and locate it on Netflix or beyond and get a hold of it.
Okay.
I'll put it on my hit list.
What about you? Do you have a favorite time travel movie?
I'm going to go with a cliche answer, but Back to the Future. I absolutely do love that film.
We're talking about the first one, right?
Yeah, the first one.
Did you know that I just found this out the other day? Guess which quasi-famous person was one of, like, Biff's droogs in that movie.
Oh, Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
No, not him.
Okay, that's Needles. No, who's the other one, then, that you're thinking of?
Billy Zane.
Whoa.
Right? I just found this out, like, 2 days ago, because I just got randomly curious about what Billy Zane is up to these days, so I went to his Wikipedia article and saw that his first movie was Back to the Future. I was like, what? No. He was actually in, like, the first two, if not all three of them.
Huh.
Hmm.
I'm gonna keep my eye out next time, watch it.
So there you go.
There you go. I know it's a cliche answer, but I grew up on that film, you know, it was my childhood, along with, you know, like, Ghostbusters and Return of the Jedi, but...
Yeah, me too.
And to this day, I will not argue with the fact that Robert Zemeckis really lines up the tension in the first film beautifully.
Yeah.
That climax at the end is just so well done that every time I still watch it...
It still makes me nervous.
I'm still worried that he's not going to pull it off. I'm waiting for that one day that he doesn't pull it off.
What would you do if you were watching it, like, tomorrow and he didn't pull it off?
I would probably call 911 because I had ingested something and I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
You know, call and be like, hospital, please. I'm not sure what's going on.
What's going on is that time travel is real and that somebody went back and changed the ending of that movie.
It bothers me. Recently, I watched the Stephen Hawking interview and he's like, sorry, time travel cannot exist. It going backwards. It cannot happen.
I know.
Physics will not allow for it. We can go forward.
Yeah.
But in a limited way, but we cannot go back.
Yeah.
Sadness. But what do you think the obsession with time travel movies is for you?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's that different than it is for anybody. I think time travel obsesses a lot of people. I guess it's a... You know, it probably has a lot to do with romanticizing the past, you know, because obviously there are plenty of time travel movies, stories where you go forward in time. But I think, don't you think most people are interested in going back in time?
I think everybody's fantasized about it, yeah.
Right. I think for some people, it's just that they feel like they would naturally be more at home in a different time period. They like the styles better, or they like the, you know, politics better, although that's hard to imagine in a lot of cases, you know, or they just like the attitude of the time. They feel like a different generation, a different place, that those people were part of something important. They were part of some, like, cultural movement, some sort of sea change. I mean, don't you think that's it? I know there are other people who have, you know, rather maybe a little more, their motives are a little less pure. They just want to go back in time, you know, to make money. Like, I'm going to go back in time and I'm going to invent Facebook. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't do something that extreme. I would just take back the sheet music for a very good song and be like, yeah, I'm going to copyright this in my name.
Yep.
I wrote Hey Jude.
Yes, you did.
My now. I know, I understand that obsession. I have friends who obsess over times gone by and to the point where they dress like it, they've decorated their house in that, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't go back to a time when I had to use payphones and worry about, do I have a quarter on me in case something happens?
Why are you hating on payphones?
Oh, I don't hate on them. I just like, now with cell phone and convenience, okay, there's some things to be happy about now. I'll say something else instead. I never got the 80s memorabilia craze a couple years ago. I know 20 years since I call it nostalgia, but still, I grew up in the 80s. I'm sorry, but 80s music for the most part was shit.
Yeah, but most of the music in any given time period is shit.
Very good point. But don't give me this whole thing of like, oh, the 80s were the best decade in music. No, they weren't.
No, they weren't. I think it means something for me to say that too, because I have probably been to more 80s. I would challenge somebody on how many. I haven't counted, but I could probably make a rough estimate if I sat down and thought about it. I have been to so many 80s nights. It's insane. And also, you know, I'm one of those stupid people who collects vinyl, and I have a buttload of 80s music, and I love 80s music. I love my Joy Division and my Smiths and my Depeche Mode and my Cure and all that nonsense. You know, so I certainly have a fondness for it, and I have a fondness for a lot of the fashion, but I hear you. Like, I don't want to relive Bon Jovi. Please don't make me.
No, I don't want to either.
And I don't want to, like, sit around laughing at old, like, Transformer videos either.
I tried watching He-Man a couple years ago because I loved He-Man when I was like 4. I watched it and I watched one episode and I'm like, the animation is shit. The script makes no damn sense.
Dialogue is terrible.
None of this is, the actors are doing the best. I'm picturing instead now being the voice actor and they're having to read this stuff and going,
thanks.
Really? Make it sound like you're scared, but I have to say these words. Yes. Okay.
You say so.
We got a couple hours because this is going to take a bit for me to figure this out.
You know what? I've never tried to go back and watch in my adult years, even though I loved it as a kid. The Smurfs. Did you ever try to go back and watch any of that?
I only vaguely remember the Smurfs because that was, what, 82, 83, so I'm like 4.
Yeah.
So I was like just a little too young for the Smurfs.
Yeah. The Smurfs, that was some racy stuff.
I'm well aware of them later on, but I've never actually gone back to watch the 82 cartoon or anything.
Yeah, no, okay. Well, that's okay. We were traipsing down the 80s memorabilia, songs to play while reliving your 80s childhood path. And we started out talking about, don't you hate those people who do that? And then we started doing it, so, you know.
Exactly. So what was the first album you remember owning as a child? that you could claim as yours.
Okay, like the first album I bought with my money, or the first album like I remember having?
Let's go with the first one that you bought with your own money. You made the choice, this is your album.
Oh, it's totally, I know this one. I know this one because it was a big moment in my life when I decided that I wanted an album bad enough that I saved up my money, my allowance money, and then I asked my mom to take me to the record store so I could buy Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Not a bad choice.
It wasn't a bad choice, was it?
No. That is a killer album.
It's a killer album. It's a killer. And you know what? I have the picture disc, too.
Oh, bitchin'. I can't say that. My first was Invisible Touch by Genesis.
That is, oh, come on. That's still pretty good.
I will play that album still to this day. I've owned it on CD. I've owned a digital copy of it. I love that album. Didn't realize until like 2 years ago what half the songs were really about. And I went to Wikipedia. I was like, wait a minute, Domino Parts 1 and 2, this is all about the Lebanon crisis? Holy crap, it all makes sense now. You know, and children are screaming and playing with books. Their faces are changing. The liquid surrounds me and I am alone. This makes sense now.
Oh, man. Why is there so much weird mythology around, like, Phil Collins songs?
I have no idea.
I feel like, you know, people will tell me the craziest shit about, like, what In the Air Tonight means or what studio means. And then I look it up, and it's all just urban legend that is built up around these songs. You, like, hear interviews with Phil Collins. He's like, no, I have no idea what that song means. I just thought it sounded cool.
You know, it's like everybody tells me, like, oh, In the Air Tonight is about, you know. No, I'm like, no. 90% of Phil Collins' solo work is my wife is leaving me, and I'm sad.
And I'm going to wear these tennis shoes and a baggy suit to prove it.
And you're going to love this song because it's catchy as hell.
It's catchy as hell. Damn you, Phil Collins.
No, when I hear In the Air Tonight, I don't think of, you know, the urban mythology. I think of that the pilot episode of Miami Vice where they use it when Tubbs and Crockett are driving down the Miami street in the night in the Ferrari convertible, and it's playing.
Why do you know the first episode from Miami Vice?
Because I'm a rock and roll pop culture person, and so many pop musicians were on Miami Vice that I've watched a dozen episodes or so.
Just to, like, hear the shitty 80s music?
Just to see how it worked?
Hate.
I mean, Frank Zappa plays a drug lord in one episode.
Really?
Where they go after him on a boat, and it's just weird to see Frank Zappa coming down with his short, sober 80s haircut talking about, yeah, I had to kill Mendoza. And it's like, what?
What are you doing here?
I know he did it for his son, who was, like, obsessed with the show. He's like, fine, I'll for you. You and I should get together sometime and just have an 80s trivia off.
Oh, you'd probably win. I'm not that good with it. Like, I know my 80s music pretty well, but no. And most of my stuff that I know is, like, new wave stuff.
That's my low area, actually.
Point. Well, maybe we should just team up and form an 80s unstoppable trivia team duo.
We will be our own traveling Wilburys.
Okay.
We'll be a super group. We'll just put together, you know.
Can we come up with a better name than that?
Yes, we can. Okay. But we have to be related. You know, it has to be like the Wilburys. We all have to take the same last name then.
The traveling Waffle Houses. No. Mm. No, I'll think about it. The Waffle Tears. I like it. Done.
The Wafflesons.
The Wafflesons. There. That's it.
Little House on the Waffle House? Yeah, a Little House on the Waffle?
No, too much. Too far. Yeah. Too far. I'm riding down the Wafflesons.
We have gone too far for too little.
The Waffle Bats.
Ooh, Waffle Bats.
It's like Wiffle Bats, which is an 80s reference.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Waffle Bats.
That's true. Hmm.
But it's updated in that weird, you know, indie band way that's also of the moment.
Exactly. It's like we're paying tribute to our roots and the culture, but it's different and new. It's the same song.
And it also makes sense because, you know, as we've established, you're in Florida, home of the Waffle House, and I'm from Austin, which is the home of bats.
There you go.
Waffle Bats.
There you go. We'll be the Waffle Bats, and we'll take on any competitors in an 80s trivia off.
Okay. All right, done.
We'll bring it on. I don't care if you were 16 during the mid-80s and were more cognizant of what was going on.
I was not 16 in the mid. Oh, I see. You're not actually talking to me. You're talking to our invisible competitors.
Exactly. Like, well, you know, I was a teenager, so I know more than you. Oh yeah, well, who was Casper Weinberger? Bring it.
Waffle Bats.
Exactly. You know, Waffle Bats for life. We'll have to come up with some, like, really 80s kind of slogan that would be there too.
Okay.
You know, we'll have to think of something like that. But we'll ace anybody in 80s trivia.
Can we have terry cloth headbands that say Waffle Bats?
Oh yes. Yes, we can.
Okay. That won't even be very expensive.
No, and we need, like, some kind of day glow uniform too.
Day glow uniform?
Yeah, we need something like that.
like a jumpsuit? What do you mean? What sort of uniform?
I don't know, but we need some kind of 80s signature thing. The headbands works, but I don't know.
We could have hypercolor t-shirts.
Ooh, I'll tell you what we could do.
Oh, those are 90s, aren't they?
I'll tell you what we could do.
What?
We could go Koala Blue.
Koala Blue. Why does that name sound familiar?
Because that was
what that is.
That was an early 80s Australian venture with Olivia Newton-John.
Oh,
for like food and drink. They still, I believe they're still around, Koala Blue Wine.
Whoa. That was buried somewhere in like the recesses of my mind, and you just partially unearthed it, and now I feel a little queasy.
I tend to do that as well to many people. I make them queasy.
Oh, I made so many people queasy at this dance last night. It was like a blues house party. And for some reason, even though it said, like, feel free to bring food or drink if you like, it was sort of a BYOB situation. I get there, and there is this super intense spread. I mean, there's stuffed grape leaves and ripe figs and fresh cherries, and there's like bourbon pecan brownies and all this stuff. And I'm like, what?
It was the poetry voice of the food world.
Is the poetry voice of the, a little bit. And I don't know what was happening there, because I've been to potlucks that had spreads that weren't even like 1/8 that impressive. And that's a potluck. That's the jam with the potluck, is that everybody brings food. And sometimes it's even organized, so people don't bring too much of the same thing. I fucking hate potlucks, by the way. If you're going to have a party, just buy the stuff. I'll buy it this time. Next time you throw something, then you buy the stuff. Right?
But you're not a fan of the poets, the peasants' banquet?
How is that different from a potluck?
It's basically the same thing, except that it's at Christmas time kind of thing.
Oh. I don't know. I mean, I'm okay with people bringing food if they want, But I'm not a fan of events where there isn't going to be food unless everybody chips in and brings food. And like, none of the things go together, and they're not like very good together. But I'm getting off track. So they had this great spread at this house party, and they had these fresh figs, and everybody is like eating these figs, and then I start telling a couple of people like, hey, did you know that figs have dead wasps inside them? Like, and they were like, what? And they were kind of laughing at first, and I was like, no, it's true. Every fig has a dead wasp that's inside, and usually mostly digested, although sometimes you find parts. People didn't believe me at first, and they did, and they started telling everyone, and everyone stopped eating these delicious looking figs. And people who had already eaten a bunch were looking a little green.
Cruel, but also wonderful.
Yeah, right? When am I ever going to have another chance to see a whole bunch of people at a party, like, eating fresh figs and get to tell them that fact?
I don't know. You got to take advantage of those moments when they're there.
I did. But it did feel a little mean, because what a kind of amazing thing to bring to a party. I still like figs. I'm over the fact that they have a dead wasp in them. That's fine. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, they're tasty.
They are, yeah.
So I wouldn't be problematic with it either. Oh well, you gotta eat something eventually. Well, it's not the last time I'll eat dead bugs.
So you would be totally okay with that? Have you done that before? Have you had like the chocolate crickets or the ants or whatever?
No, I haven't. I'm more referring to the fact that scientists say that during your lifetime you swallow something like 30 spiders while you sleep or something.
Every time I hear that figure, it goes up.
Yeah.
I believe it, though. I used to live in this place where I would, like, wake up suddenly, and I would see a spider hanging right above my face, or, like, crawling down the wall towards me. I think they were, like, specifically, I think for some reason, And I haven't tried looking this up lately, so I don't know if there's some reason that spiders would specifically be attracted to your face. But I caught multiple ones, like, that were very, like, you know, uncomfortably close to my face while I was sleeping. So why they'd be there as opposed to some, because they would have to kind of get right on your face in order for you to swallow a spider. So why are the spiders wanting to get near your face?
Maybe you have really good snoring ability and they're halfway across the room or something. So every time you inhale, they float closer and closer. I don't know.
I hope my snores aren't that epic.
I don't know. You know, I don't know what the reason is for spiders. Are you one of those people that's do you have arachnophobia?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
I am totally freaked out by spiders.
Okay.
Spiders and scorpions. Scorpions are arachnids, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
I'm going to assume they are.
Yeah.
As long as there are no follow-up questions whatsoever, yes. Yes, they are.
Yeah, scorpions. Okay, I'm going to keep adding to the list now. Scorpions, centipedes, spiders.
Snakes?
Snakes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Things that start with
okay.
That are creepy and on the ground.
Sharks?
Yeah, sharks also scare me.
Swallows?
No.
Starlings?
Okay. Starlings, no. I'm okay with birds. Birds don't scare me. Dogs don't scare me. Heights don't scare me.
So we can remove it. Shepherds, comma, giant.
Well, I don't know. A giant shepherd?
Yeah.
That sounds kind of scary. I think I'd be okay with a giant shepherd. Well, how big are we talking?
I don't know. I don't remember how big German shepherds are their own breed, but there is, no, I'm thinking of Irish wolfhounds. Those big dogs.
Oh, yeah. The ones that have the legs for miles.
That you wish you could just put a saddle on and ride.
Yeah. But they also always look kind of sad.
They do.
They kind of look like the weight of the world is on their back a little bit.
What? Same with St. Bernards.
Yeah.
They just look like they're really, really depressed about everything.
Well, it makes sense because of their face. But with the other ones, what are they? The Irish Wolfhounds?
Yeah, and Great Danes as well.
Oh, I love Great Danes. But yeah, it's all in their eyes. Their eyes just look really sad.
Mm. Like, they don't belong here. I'm not supposed to be this way. I am not an animal. Please. Do not look at me like you would... Look at me like you would look at another dog, please.
Oh, my God. Are you a dog person?
I am.
Yeah? Do you have a dog?
Not right now, no. I don't have a yard, really, in my apartment. Because if you need a yard for a dog.
You really do.
At least a dog that looks like a dog.
Right, right.
Otherwise I get one of those Chihuahua things, and they're not dogs, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's not a real dog.
Dog looks like dog.
Mm-hmm.
Just like cats can look like anything except hairless cats.
Cats can look like anything?
Well, cats can look like any other cat. There's really no difference, except hairless cats.
Oh, that well, see, that's a dog person talking.
Yeah.
Cats are way, way different, I think.
Fair enough, I do own a cat.
Oh, you do? You're a dog person, but you own a cat? Oh, poor thing.
I know. One day I will have a dog. My wife has promised me I can have dogs again once we have a place.
What's your cat's name? Wait, don't tell me. Don't tell me. I get three guesses.
Okay, you get three guesses.
Wait, is it a girl cat or a boy cat?
Boy cat.
Boy cat. Okay. Skittles.
Nope.
Okay. Bridget Bardot.
Closer, but no.
Bob Newhart.
No. Okay. If I had a schizophrenic cat, I might call him the many sides of Bob Newhart, but that's an obscure reference joke.
All right. What's your cat's name?
Hef, as in Hugh Hefner.
Oh, I almost said that.
The story is that when he came to the shelter, he was too young to be fixed.
Uh-huh.
And they put it, when the cat comes to a shelter, they put him in an isolation area for a time until they figure out, you know, blood tests, yeah. Are they okay to mix into the general population? Apparently he broke through the isolation area and was found macking on all the lady cats.
What?
So they named him Hef, as in Hugh Hefner.
Oh, and you stuck with the name that they gave him at the shelter.
Once I heard that story, I was like, I'm keeping that.
That's great.
So I got him a nice little play area, you know, with those little, you know, has all scratching posts all over and places to sit and height and all that. I want to remove the logo off it and shove a Playboy logo on it because I consider it his mansion.
You know,
and I've named everything. The bottom floor is called the grotto.
Oh.
The little hidey hole area is the editing room because Hef still edits the magazine to this day. Then the two towers, the shorter one is called the presidential suite, and then the top one is a double joke, the penthouse.
Wow. You've thought a lot about this.
That took me all of about 30 seconds to do. And my wife is like, and you wonder why I'm married to you.
I love it. I love it. This sounds like a really elaborate cat castle.
It is. And of course, he prefers to go sleep on the chair or on the couch or in a box.
Yeah, always. They don't like the things they give that you give them. They don't want to sleep on that. They like sleeping on the things they're not supposed to.
And so you pick him up and put him on it to be like, listen, guy, I paid $150 for this. Please use it.
You're gonna enjoy it.
Please use it to make me feel a little bit better. I could have bought groceries. I could have gone out to, you know, a really nice steakhouse with that money. Just make me happy for a moment.
He doesn't ever play on it at all.
He does. He does. He likes to nap up in the top areas, especially when there's nice sunlight out and everything. He'll nap there.
Yeah.
But most days it's, yeah, I'm going to sleep on the couch. I'm going to sleep on the chair.
Yeah. My cat likes to sleep on top of my computer.
He hasn't done that yet, but that's because the keyboard and everything is tucked underneath the desk, so he can't do that.
Uh-huh. So that's how you do it.
But I do have to get canned air constantly to blow out the hair, the cat hair that gets into the fans and everything.
The cat hair is just a menace.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I got a short hair cat. This will be great. And my wife's like, give it a week. Sure enough, you just kind of learn to live with cat hair on your clothing, in your food, in the shower.
I keep a lint roller right by the front and back door so that whenever I'm leaving, I just give myself a quick once over and then good. Unless I'm wearing black and I'm going somewhere important, then I really have to do a thorough job.
Most of the time, though, it's like glitter, basically. You're not going to get rid of it.
Not going to get rid of it. But unlike glitter, thankfully, people don't stuff like invitations full of cat hair so that when you open it up, cat hair goes everywhere. Surprise!
You know what? I think that's what I'm going to do for AWP now.
Yeah.
For a reading, I'm just going to make glitter announcements and let the hotel deal with the problem.
Nice!
Just make glitter announcements. They have to vacuum the floor, not me.
That's true. That's true. And you have to pay... Are you talking about this happening in the book fair portion or like
yeah, I think the book fair portion would work.
Yeah. Except that, well, they do make us pay an arm and a leg for all that, but you know, but that, it's not the people who are getting all the money who would have to vacuum it up. It'd be like the poor, you know.
Good point. And not only that, if people don't throw them out, they keep them or they bring them with them or they bring them home, God forbid, in their suitcase.
Right. And then they hate you.
Exactly. They won't forget me, but not in the good way.
Right.
Damn it, where'd I get this? Oh, damn it, this is the person who gave me the glitter.
Cat hair might be better.
I've seen actually some crafts done with cat hair. You have like a shaver and you shave off their hair as they shed, and then they keep the cat hair and make beads out of it and can do other crafts with it.
Beads out of cat hair?
Yeah. You can do these kind of things. I've seen things on Etsy and elsewhere using cat hair.
That's... I don't like that one bit. I don't like it one bit. That just sounds gross. I can kind of see it, but...
What else are you going to do with it other than throw it out? You know, if you can do something and make a couple bucks, you do it.
I don't want to spend that much of my time working with cat hair, though.
Yeah, but... Again, money is a powerful motivator.
So why don't you do it?
I don't have the artistic skill.
Okay.
I have succeeded in one craft project in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And it was a gift for my wife for her birthday this year.
What was it?
It was a deck of playing cards with the reasons that I love her, because she's always asking me, why do you love me? So I made her a deck of cards.
Does she mean that seriously, or is it just playful, or is she like fishing?
It's a combination, I think. Sometimes you really don't know. why the hell are you with me?
Yeah.
And so she's like, I really don't know why you're with me sometimes. And so I made her a deck of cards that 52 of them, you flip through like a little book of, well, here's the reasons I love you. Some of them.
That's a really good idea. Did you just come up with that?
No, I stole it from someone on the internet. That's and then I modded it my way.
Yeah, of course. No, I might steal that idea too. I'm writing it down under Contra Dance, Use, and Waffle Sense. Do you like how I'm keeping notes?
I'm keeping them too. Currently, I have topics to put up for this episode on the website. We've got Waffle House, Texas, improv comedy with a question mark, slow moving people, the poet voice, time travel in the 80s, 80s trivia team snooper group.
Yeah. See?
There you go. See, I'm planning these things out. Yeah. So anyway, so we are almost out of time.
Wow, that flew fast.
I know, and I'm amazed. And here we were discussing off camera, so to speak, before this, what are we going to talk about?
I know, and it just happens.
Well, look at what we talked about. Waffle House, Texas. You know, we can go down the list again.
Yeah. Figs.
Figs. Oh, yes, we've got all figs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot. I'm sure there's a lot more we could talk about, but in the time
we talked about Phil Collins.
Phil Collins as well.
Yeah.
We talked about. We tried to avoid poetry, but we ended up talking about some of it.
It's okay. We talked about teaching.
We talked about teaching, yeah, and and not wanting to write because teaching kills you for it.
It does.
I think that's maybe why I do this podcast, is so that I can talk to writers again and feel like I'm still part of the scene.
Well, but, you know, I think it's wise to not actually talk about writing. You know what you should do? You ever watch Drunk History?
I know of it, but I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's phenomenal. I recommend it. So yep. Watch Scott's watch list for later today includes Somewhere in Time and Drunk History.
Well, I'm going to be grading today. That's today's job, but I'll put those on the list.
You don't need to commit your full attention to that.
That's a good point.
No, it's fantastic that they get, you know, comedians to come on there and talk about a historic event that happened while getting drunker and drunker on camera.
That's always fun.
Yeah, you should do a special version of Saptacast that's like drunk Saptacast. You talk to writers, you plan a time for them to be drunk.
Well, we have plans actually very similar to that. We're going to do at least two episodes at AWP.
Yeah.
And I've said this on the Twitter feed and everything for us that my dream episode, I don't care who the guest is, but I want to do it from a hot tub.
Ooh. But don't you think that the bubbling will you be able to hear people over
we'll figure something out.
Water?
If I have to do it as a boom mic, I will do it. I don't care. I
want to
do
them to be in a hot tub, or do you want to be in a hot tub?
Both.
Or should both people be in a hot
tub?
We're
just all sitting in the hot tub together.
I see. It's a live interview. Like you're both in the same place.
Yeah. We're just sitting in the tub together and enjoying it.
That's funny because the last Drunk History I watched at the end, the two guys ended up in a bath together.
I would love to do one in a bathtub as well.
And it wasn't weird at all.
No, I don't think it would be. No, like we're just sitting in the tub. What? You know, there's some soap here and shampoo. And if we want to clean, we can, you know. Excuse me, I have to go underwater real quick. I got to soak my hair. Okay, cool.
You don't mind if I put my ankles up around your ears for a second, do you?
No. You got to take care of your upper leg area. That's no problem, man. It's all good, you know. But anyway, in the moments that we've got left here, are you working on anything? Anything coming up down the pike you want to promote real quick?
Well, Sundress is sometime soon putting out, they're reissuing my chapbook Alabama Steve, which is you know, a book of flash fictions or prose poems, however you like to think of it, all based on guys named Steve, and it sort of follows a surreal narrative, and it came out back in 2000 and I want to say 8, with Destructible Heart Press, wonderful press, but they went on hiatus and they sort of ceased to exist. And Erin, who has always been a big fan of that book, I think she's taught it a couple of times in her classes. We wanted to do something together. And I said, well, you know, probably republish Alabama Steve. And that was what she wanted to do. She was like, yes, Steve. So she is making Steve live again as an electronic chapbook. And that makes me really happy. So that's coming out soon. And, you know, I've been working on this book-length poem based on Max Ernst for a couple of years now. So that's what I've been up to.
Awesome. Well, how can the folks also find you out there on the interwebs?
They can come find me on Facebook, or they can come find me on Twitter. Although, to be honest, I don't tweet very much these days. I just have been real lazy about tweeting. I also have a website. They can go to KarinaMcGlynn.com, although I'd prefer if they did not go like for a week or so, because I'm in the middle of putting a new website up, and the old one, I've been informed, has all sorts of outdated links that now go to porn sites. You know, so I mean, if you're into that, like, yeah, by all means.
I will go check that just to make sure. I will verify that. No. So hopefully by the time this episode airs, the new website will be up and running just fine.
The new website should be up and running just fine. I think
Woo-hoo.
So.
Woo-hoo. Well, Corinna, it has been awesome talking to you. I'm so glad we got to do this.
Me too.
And yeah, we're going to have to get together now in the future. We've already made plans here now that at the next poetry reading that we're both there for, we got to sit together so we can hit each other's ribs and be each other's second banana.
Right. And, you know, waffle bats for the win. At the
we
next
will.
Week. Are you going to go?
I am aiming to be there. Yeah.
Awesome.
In Minneapolis.
Well, I'll see you there with headbands on.
Indeed. All right. You take care of yourself.
All right. You too, Scott. Later.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.